This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, a conversation with Lake County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Weiser about the September 16th countywide caucus to select a new county sheriff. Taste Carter with Valparaiso University will be with us to talk about this fall's Pathways to Purpose speaker series, and we'll bring back our conversation with Leslie Plezak of Purdue University Northwest's Westville campus about the annual series of Sinai Forum speakers. It gets underway September 10th. Coming up on September 16th will be a very special caucus for Lake County Democratic Party Precinct Committee people to talk about and hear from people who are interested in filling the position that former Sheriff John Buntzich had held in the County Government Center. And to talk more about it, we have the chairman of the Lake County Democratic Party, Jim Weiser, with us. Jim, thanks for being with us here on Regionally Speaking today.
Oh, happy to be with you, Chris.
Well, we know the circumstances that you folks are under in coming up with this very special caucus. Maybe ask first, since we've had a few days since the jury came back with the convictions on Sheriff Buntzich, what seemed to be the shakeout within the county government center here? I guess maybe it's more like fallout, I suppose. People thinking about this, and how is that likely to have any impact, if any at all, on the upcoming caucus?
In my discussions with a whole lot of folks, and my own thoughts included, it was a sad day. It was a sad day for John Buntzich and his family. When that verdict was rendered, it was a sad day for the Democratic Party and for the folks in Lake County. Nobody takes any delight in what happened. But you know what? My obligation as chairman is to move the party forward. And that's how I've talked to people. I've said, you know, this incident, these kinds of activities that occur from time to time, there's just simply no room left for it in governing, nor is there any room left for it in our party structure, and we have to move on from it. And that's kind of the way I've looked at it. And after a couple of days of reflection, that seems to be the way most folks are looking at it. So everybody's looking forward to the future and what that may bring, whether it be in the caucus or in the primary next year.
Now, if you will, fill us in on the procedure that is going to happen on September 16th to let people know how this is all set up. How did you folks there within the Lake County Democratic Party organize this is such an important caucus in such a short period of time?
Well, you know, the first thing we do, Chris, is I look at them all the same. I consider every time an elected official has to be replaced at midterm for whatever the reason, under the statute, I consider it an important matter because you're right, it is a short period of time. But they don't make distinctions in the statute. It applies for the office of sheriff as it would for treasurer or auditor or any other office. But we're pretty much geared for it. We know what the notice has to contain. We know what the time limitations were. So we're preparing the notice now. It's our game plan to have the notice issued tomorrow. In other words, it'll be mailed tomorrow. And we're required to give at least 10-day notice of the caucus, and the caucus will be held Saturday, September 16th, in the auditorium at the Lake County Government Center. The caucus will begin at 10 a.m. The doors will open at 9 a.m. for registration. People have until when the notice is issued, from that point in time until 72 hours prior to the caucus, those who want to file have got to prepare a declaration of candidacy and statement of economic interest form and submit those to our Democratic headquarters in the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know that there have been a number of people who have offered, at least to the media, their thoughts about wanting to run for sheriff. And I guess a number of these people, I'm sure, will probably put their, technically, hats in the ring, so to speak, for this position in the caucus coming up here. Tell us about some of the people who have that you know of, at least, and you mentioned as well in the past that there could be more candidates than the ones that we know of right now. But who are some of the people that are likely to announce that they would like to be considered in the caucus?
Well, some of the folks certainly that have indicated either to me and or to the media that they have a definite interest in running are There's Dave Dowling, who's the chief of police in Schererville. There's Oscar Martinez, who has been on the Lake County Police Force for a number of years and has previously run for sheriff. Dan Merchick, who's a commander on the police force and is a precinct committeeman, and I think the, I'm not exactly sure of his title, but it's a title with the labor folks, with the union folks. There's Roy Dominguez has expressed an interest, the former sheriff. Richard Ligon from Gary, who has a military and background, and I believe was a postal inspector and has run for sheriff before. He's expressed an interest. Recently, in fact, yesterday evening, I ran into the former county commissioner, Jerry Shube, who said that he has an interest in it. Tom O'Donnell in the past has expressed an interest in it, the former county councilman. I haven't spoken to him recently about that.
He's an attorney in Highland, I understand.
He's an attorney in Highland, correct. Okay. And a former Lake County councilman. So there's a number of folks who have, those are the ones I can think that have publicly expressed an interest. Every once in a while you hear another name, but I'm not aware of any other folks now who, I don't believe I'm aware of any that have expressed to me an interest in it.
Now, we know that there's good staff, very capable staff that is back in the sheriff's department that are actually running things as the vacancy continues. And at that point, after the caucus chooses somebody to fill the vacancy, that they may have somebody that maybe will sit in the office until the elections come up here and hold the office until the end of December 2018. Is that very possible? Or are we likely to see somebody when it all comes down after the vote on September 16th that somebody who is going to be a strong candidate for running for a position in the election?
I certainly think you'll see other people run in the primary regardless of who's selected in the caucus. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about that. The good thing from my perspective as chairman of the party is that when I look at the folks that have expressed an interest, all of them have a, well, with the exception of Jerry Shube, all of them have a law enforcement background, some of them really steeped in law enforcement administration, and they all have a good background in the community and a good political background. So from that perspective, I'm pleased to see that we have so many well-qualified candidates, and we're just going to have to see how it works out.
So actually, we'll just say that somebody happens to be chosen by the members of the caucus when they get together on that Saturday, and that person's going to obviously be in the seat for a while. They could,
right,
of course, run for the office on their own, and maybe, who knows, they might win, actually.
Oh, no question about that. I would be awful surprised to see someone who wins the caucus that then doesn't turn around and decide to run in the primary because they've demonstrated a clear interest in wanting to fill the office and to take the sheriff's department in the right direction. Now, I do know that the former commissioner Shuve has indicated that he would be more of a placeholder, go in there for the 15 months or so that would be left on the unexpired term, and then might not then run in the primary. Other than that, I don't know of any other candidates that wouldn't turn around and run in the primary.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Lake County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Weiser about the September 16th caucus of all of the Lake County Democratic Precinct Committee members getting together at the Lake County Government Center on that Saturday to hear from the people who are interested in being Lake County Sheriff, whether it's a temporary for the year and some months to fill out the vacancy of John Buncich, or possibly maybe even continuing on in their own particular office in the future. We'll have to wait and see about that. In the people that you have talked to, Jim, that have told you about their thoughts about what has happened that's gotten everybody to this point of the caucus coming up here, do they think that maybe that this might be, and as you mentioned before, too, this turning point that you have hoped for and that you have pushed for as the Democratic Party chairman to see some turnaround to end the public corruption that Lake County seems to have been the epithet, I suppose, that has Lake County's been tarred with over the years?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, several have indicated that. And as I've said to them, and as I've said to our city and town chairman in a meeting we had a while back, I believe very strongly in that. That's why I decided that I was going to run for chairman. That was one of the reasons I decided I was going to run for chairman. I don't think this party can move forward unless we give a clear indication to our constituents, to the people in this county, and to the folks in the state of Indiana that we're serious about ridding ourselves of this perception of corruption. And I've indicated that those folks that have been engaged in that kind of activity, there's no room for them in our party anymore. And I don't mean to, I don't want to be mean-spirited about it. I simply want to be realistic about it. We have to move forward. It's a new day. We have to get younger. We have to look for good, qualified candidates, and that's what I intend to do as the chairman of the party.
Now, let me ask you, I guess, on a side note, now we know that the Republican Party, obviously, is kind of sitting back and watching things as they have been developed in the recent weeks, and certainly since the trial began for Sheriff Buntzich and with the verdict on the guilty verdict that's been handed down. Have you heard anything, either from Dan Durnell, who's the Lake County Republican Party chairman, or other people that are in the party that you're friends with and acquaintances with, whether they see that whoever is chosen by the caucus is going to be a good, strong candidate that they're going to have to go up against in the November election of 2018?
Oh, if I understood the question, Chris, you mean that who the Republicans might be bringing forth as a well-qualified or strong candidate?
Certainly, they'll if they see that somebody comes out of the caucus meeting, and as the person who's filling the spot as Lake County Sheriff for the time being, and they do decide to run on their own, they're going to probably have an opportunity, and they're probably going to have to come up with an equally strong candidate as well, I would think, wouldn't they?
Well, I would imagine they would probably take a look at it as they do any other countywide office and make an assessment. Dan, I do periodically talk to Dan, who's as you said, is a dear friend of mine. Dan and I have been friends for years. We may have political differences, but we certainly respect each other, and have our families have known each other for a long time. He hasn't mentioned anything to me about that. Mm-hmm. I think they'll probably take a look at it. I think they're going to wait and see what happens with the caucus and how strong that individual, whoever is the successful person, comes out and demonstrates how they intend to run the sheriff's department, and hopefully run it in a no-nonsense fashion and a non-political fashion, just philosophically from a law enforcement perspective, where they'll say, that's our obligation. Our obligation is to patrol the unincorporated area. Our obligation is to operate an efficient a constitutional jail. And our obligation is to provide the best crime lab that we can in the state of Indiana, and do those things that are the functions and responsibilities of the sheriff's department.
Well, it sounds like you have all of the nuts and bolts set to go for the September 16th caucus there in Crown Point, and we wish you all the best of luck, and certainly your colleagues in dealing with this. It's not easy to get 500 or so people in the same room together and get them to help go through this here, but obviously you've got the machinery ready to be able to consider whoever is put the name in as a candidate and to help get the vote. Hopefully you won't have too many ballots that have to be cast on that day.
That'd be really nice, Chris. I strongly suspect there'll be at least several, but we'll get it done.
Lake County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Weiser with us. Jim, thank you very much for taking time to talk, and we'll hopefully have a chance to check back with you and find out how things are developing, too, as we get close to the caucus and the final results as well, too. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Chris.
You're listening to Originally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. We're getting ready for this year's speakers to come to Valparaiso University to talk in what is called the Pathways to Purpose Speaking Series. It's put on by Valparaiso University's Institute for Leadership and Service. And to talk about the series of speakers and why they're so important to listen to, we have Tace Carter, who's in charge of the particular program on the Valparaiso University campus. Tace, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, remind people again a little bit about the center itself, as well as the reason that you have this Pathways to Purpose speaker series on the way.
Definitely. So Valparaiso University's Institute for Leadership and Service exists to help students cultivate skills that will support their leadership and service for a lifetime and build relationships that offer good conversation partners and support around what we think are pretty big life choices. But most importantly, and this is the part that applies to both Valparaiso University students as well as adults of all ages, the Institute wants to help cast a vision for what a life of leadership and service can include. And this is where the Pathways to Purpose speaker series really comes in. We work very hard to provide access to truly exceptional women and men who are contributing to the public good in a wide variety of fields all across the country. And through their stories, we get a vision for what's possible and living proof that the quote-unquote pathway to purpose is often anything but straight.
All the speeches, by the way, are going to be held in the Helgi Center there on the Valparaiso University campus, which is right next door to the Chapel of Resurrection, so you can't miss it. They're in the almost the center of the VU campus. If you will, Tace, tell us first off about the first speaker and what he's going to be speaking about.
Yeah, so Robert Egger, he's the founder of LA Kitchen, and he'll be with us Wednesday, September 6th. So he's the founder and president of LA Kitchen, which is an organization that recovers locally sourced, what they consider cosmetically imperfect, fruits and vegetables, and they use all of that to fuel this culinary arts job training program that serves both women and men who are coming out of foster care, who've kind of aged out of the system, as well as older men and women who are returning or reintegrating into society after being incarcerated. He pioneered this model during what was a 24-year tenure as the president of DC Central Kitchen, which is often considered the country's first community kitchen. He's also the founder of this organization called Sea Forward, which was an advocacy group that promoted the economic role that nonprofits play in every community. And I think that that's something that especially with kind of there are just so many wonderful kind of startup nonprofit type organizations here in the region. I think we'll have a lot to say that'll be of interest to people in Valpo and kind of beyond.
Now, on September 27th, another speaker's coming to Valparaiso University. And I understand Beverly Schultz is going to bring a rather personal experience to light and talk more about that.
Yeah, so in addition to being an alum of Valparaiso University, Bev, she's so phenomenal. And I think with the university having held the successful STEM camp for young women this summer, and there's been all this conversation more recently about kind of the Google memo and kind of where women fit in talking about engineering and technology and being part of that work, she was really doing engineering before it was something that we were talking about women contributing to that field. So she wrote this book called Skip the Typing Test, I'll Manage the Software, One Woman's Pioneering Journey in High Tech. And so she'll talk a little bit about what her experience was like and the team that she was a part of that helped create one of the first 3D chips that actually in its time won 7 awards at Comdex, which is a major honor in engineering and software. So she's really phenomenal, and to be able to speak as an alumni of Valparaiso University, I think will have a lot of resonance for people here today.
Now, the Pathways to Purpose speaker series will continue on in October, and tell us about the speaker that month.
Yeah, so Cam Buckner is the executive director of World Sport Chicago, and we're very excited about this because I think often when people get kind of into this idea of like, oh, if I'm gonna be serving, they think about nonprofits and they think about, you know, actually taking a service year or a gap year. And Cam is somebody who, you know, his background was in athletics. He was an athlete first, and then he ended up working in government and neighborhood relations with the Chicago Cubs. And today, he's the executive director of World Sport Chicago, which supports resiliency and strengthens communities by increasing access to youth sports. So this is the type of event where, you know, and him talking about translating athletic leadership, you know, from the field to your community, we really feel like this is an event where not just, you know, student athletes at the university level, but local coaches and student athletes, you know, younger and high school age could really get a lot from his talk.
Now, in November, there are going to be 2 speakers as the series wraps up for the semester for the Pathways to Purpose series. Tell us about these 2 folks that are coming in and what they're going to be talking to folks on campus as well as the general community about.
Yeah, so on November 1st, we're hosting Beth Crepine. She's a special agent with the FBI. She graduated from Valparaiso University's law school. After that, she was a prosecuting attorney in St. Joseph County, Indiana, and then she was accepted into the FBI Academy. Since graduating the Academy, she worked with the Chicago Division's Joint Task Force on Gangs. She was part of their crisis negotiation team. And then in 2016, she was named the Chicago Division's Crisis Management Coordinator. So Beth is truly kind of on the front lines of some pretty intense stuff, and she's going to be able to come and share her experience with us. And then on Monday, November 6th, we'll be hosting Rosella Haiti White. She has this great personal story. She's actually the only speaker of the group that I've actually heard prior to hosting them here on campus. She has this dynamic personal story that her bio just doesn't even do it justice. But today, she's working as the Houston City Director for an organization called Mission Year. And I think that especially for people who are interested in kind of non-traditional ministry opportunities and the ways that people in ministry interact with issues of identity and race, she's just a very compelling speaker.
Now, how did you have a chance to speak, to listen to her speak the first time?
So I was at a conference last fall, and she was part of the lineup there, and I was just really taken with her story. And when I came back to campus, I was actually talking with some of the other folks who work in campus ministry here at the university. And there, we're actually bringing her in together, both with Pathways to Purpose, and she'll also be here as part of the Walt Wangren Excellence in Preaching series. So she'll be speaking for both. So she'll have a Sunday morning slot, and then she'll be with us on Monday night.
Now, that's something to know, too, that you do have the opportunity that if you have the speakers come into campus for the Pathways to Purpose speech that they're going to be making that particular day, they get to visit classes and do other things on the Valparaiso University campus, don't they?
Absolutely. So the two things that we try to do in addition to their evening presentation is we try to make sure each speaker gets some class time with a relevant class. And clearly, you know, class schedules, that's not always possible, but that's really a high priority for us. And then typically we host a smaller, more informal lunch with, you know, 10 to 12 people. And we try to really kind of weight that with students and community leaders who are directly interested in the work of the speaker, so they have a chance to get to know them in a more personal setting and hopefully do a little bit of networking, because we really want to not just have the person come in and share their story, but actually become somebody who's a resource to people who are thinking about how to do this work in their own lives. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned here about the fact that you heard her speak and that's what got you interested in bringing her to campus. In general, besides a lot of these people you mentioned, of course, being Valparaiso University alums, how do you come across having these speakers come to campus for the series?
Well, one of the things that I do is I have what I call a major map, and I have a list of all the majors and kind of fields that we support here at Valparaiso University. And one of my goals is that no matter what your major or field of interest is, in the course of 4 years here, that we would bring in a speaker who connects with your discipline and what you see yourself doing in the world. So, for example, in the spring, we're already kind of targeting somebody who has an emphasis in languages. And I think oftentimes when you tell somebody, oh, I'm a Spanish major, the first question is like, oh, you want to teach Spanish in high school? And it's like, well, no, there's actually so many things that you can do with a language major. And so I try to think about, you know, what are the majors that aren't often directly connected in people's minds with serving the public good, and then try to find somebody who has a background in that who can come and share their experience in making that connection.
I've known of people that have gotten majors, like you mentioned, in Spanish or other languages, and they found their calling in working in the diplomatic corps, actually, working for the U.S. State Department or even other places overseas. They're set up in embassies overseas, and they have done so well in their language. That's why they've taken advantage of the use of their language, their love of the language that they studied in college to be able to turn it into a good career. It sounds very interesting. Now, once again, if anybody would like more information about the speakers in the 2017 Pathways to Purpose series, how can they find out more?
They can go to our website, valpo.edu/lead-serve. The full schedule is up there, and any changes we make will be there in real time.
That's great. And by the way, too, the first of the series will begin on September 6th there at the Helge Center on the Valparaiso University campus. Tace Carter, thanks very much for being with us and telling us about it.
Thank you, Chris.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs them with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
Well, my family was all born in Mexico in the town of Querétaro. And when I was born, they decided to come to the United States for a better future, but mostly to work. My mom, growing up, was very loving. I think she took pride in her kids because that's the only thing she had here besides my father. My father, he had to take on two jobs. So he was very busy, and I wouldn't really see him during the day. It was maybe in the morning, if I woke up early enough and I saw him going off to work, and he would come back at like midnight. So he would be gone basically all day. I remember that after high school, I was always a good student, But it was during my senior year in high school that I started seeing everybody else applying to schools and get really excited about what schools they were going to go to. But that wasn't really an option for me, knowing that I wasn't going to receive any federal aid. And I knew that I still wanted to continue studying, but I just didn't have the same options as my friends. So I decided to enroll in the community college. And a lot of people mocked it as the college of last chance. Even when I was going to get my associate's degree, and I was so close to obtaining it, I didn't know whether I would be able to transfer, because even more for me, it was a financial strain on my family, knowing that I wouldn't receive any federal aid. So I started doing research on my own, looking at scholarships, looking at what schools I could apply to, and kind of easing my parents into it. Although my mom, she would always be really supportive of me. She wanted me to continue, but it was a little bit harder for my dad because he was the one making the most money. And it made me feel bad to have to ask him for his support in that way, because he's always worked really hard and I feel like he's given me as much as he can. I started telling him at schools I was looking at, and this was obviously a school I was looking at because it was 2 hours from home, so it was close enough where I knew that my parents could come visit if I wanted them to. And he was very proud of me at that point, and I remember that he started crying. He started crying because he just didn't know if he could afford it. And I remember that when he started becoming more involved, he took a weekend off and we visited schools that I had been accepted to. But he would never say much. He would just kind of look around, and I could start seeing my mom was the one that was getting very, very excited for me. She obviously wanted me to continue, and my dad did too, but in a different way. He wouldn't show it the same way. It was about 3 weeks before the semester would start, the fall semester would start, and the advisor I had spoken to here kept getting in contact with me, asking me whether I was gonna come here or not. They needed to know. I asked my dad and my mom whether I was gonna do it or not, and they just said yes. Although they didn't know exactly how they would work it out. So I made the decision to come here like 2 weeks before the semester started, and I had nothing. I gathered everything. It was a rush. It was just a mess. But I came, and I remember, because obviously I did get some help financially, but it didn't cover everything. And my dad ended up taking, because I couldn't take out student loans, he ended up taking a loan from his 401k. And that's the way he was able to help me. And although I thought my parents would come to visit, they didn't come and visit as much as they wanted to, because also like the gas money or just coming out here sometimes with work, it didn't work out as much. And that was my first year here.
You can find more original stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. This is Blast Into Scouting Campaign here in Northwest Indiana, and the Boy Scouts of America want you to know about it, about scouting. Blaze Lukowich, District Executive for the Calumet Council based here in Northwest Indiana. Blaze, thank you for being with us here on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the history, in particular the history of Boy Scouting in Northwest Indiana.
The scouting movement was brought over from England. Basically what happened was we had our wonderful founder, who got lost in a fog in London. A boy, young scout, found him and helped him find his way. And he was so moved by that he brought the scouting program back over and worked with Lord Baden-Powell to create the Boy Scouts of America. And specifically, it started traveling across the nation. The first national scout office was actually housed in New York City, in the YMCA building in New York City. But it crept across the nation and actually came to Chicago rather quickly, and then to Northwest Indiana. We actually had quite a few councils in Northwest Indiana. Specifically, we had one located in Hammond. We had one in Whiting. We had one in Gary. We had one down near Munster here, where our office is now located. And over the years, through mergers and acquisitions, the councils got fewer and fewer and fewer till about 1966. We became the Calumet Council, and then in 2015, the Calumet Council formed with four other councils across Illinois and became the Pathway to Adventure Council.
Wow.
Boy Scouts of America. So we're in our third or fourth year of being in existence, and, you know, we have that Blast of the Scouting campaign coming up.
Now, how many troops are here in Northwest Indiana? For people that that have youngsters maybe involved in the past as young people involved in scouting and Boy Scouting, Cub Scouting, and the like, how many troops are involved around the area now that come into the Calumet Council?
66 units across Northwest Indiana, and we have about 2,200 scouts. By the end of the year, we'll probably have closer to about 2,700 or 2,800 scouts in Northwest Indiana.
Well, it's very important. We know that this is now not only the campaign underway now through September 14th here in Northwest Indiana, but it's also sign-up nights as well, too. It's schools all around the region, around Chicagoland as well, too. How can families and the scouts that might be involved get signed up and learn more about Boy Scouting and learn more about the importance of scouting?
One way that you could get involved or find out more is by going to blastinascouting.org. That's where you can actually sign up online today, and that will guarantee that you get your free model rocket on the for blast days. We'll have two blast days, one the end of September, September 30th that weekend, and October 7th. But there's also sign-up locations available on that Blast in a Scouting website as well. And you can view an interactive map and see what schools are participating in your area and what schools are not. And if you look at that map, I mean, that map spreads not only Northwest Indiana and the Chicagoland area, but goes all the way down towards Peoria and out towards Western Illinois as well. So we do have quite a big footprint. And we also have, not on our website, but they're doing a similar campaign down towards Indianapolis as well and out that way.
That's
so
great.
We do have quite a big footprint for our rocket launch theme this year, that Blast in the Scouting.
We're talking with Blaze Lukowitz, who is the district executive for the Calumet Council of the Boy Scouts here in Northwest Indiana. Calumet Council, by the way, is headquarters located in Munster. Not only do you have the membership campaign that getting young people to sign up for scouting if they haven't been involved in the past, but the Pathway to Adventure Council also has a very special event coming up here near the end of September at the Lost March Golf Course.
One of the ways that we support the mission of scouting is through doing different fundraising events, such as the Golf Classic that we're having, the Calumet Golf Classic. That'll be September 25th, 2017 at Lost March Golf Course. The cost is $150 for an individual golfer. It's open to all golfers, anybody who really wants to go. There will be a lunch provided as well. Registration will begin at 8, and we'll do a start at 8:30. But it's a beautiful course. It's quite the jewel of Northwest Indiana, if your listeners have never been there. You can see from the clubhouse, you can see the industry of Northwest Indiana on one side and the city skyline on the other. It's quite a beautiful course and challenging at that as well. Not too easy, not too hard, but the committee has worked hard to make this a great event, and hopefully there's any listeners out there that want to join in as well. It's not too late to join in. All you got to do is go to pathwaytoadventure.org/Calumet Golf. And you'll be able to sign up for the golf event and register. Registration includes use of a golf cart as well as lunch provided as well.
Well, sounds like a great event coming up here on September 25th there in Hammond. We've been talking with Blaise Lukowitz, who is the district executive for the Calumet Council of the Boy Scouts of America. They're based out of Munster, and we're talking about not only an opportunity for young people to get involved in scouting with the Blast Into Scouting campaign that's underway now through September 14th and, and continuing on as well, too. Blaise, thank you for spending some time with us to talk about this. Hope that we find out more people are interested in scouting these days and get young people involved in scouting. And that's the place to go, is to the website and get the information there and sign up as well, too. Thank you for being with us to talk about it.
Thank you for having me.
The annual series of Sinai Forum speakers begins September 10th on Purdue University Northwest's Westville campus. And here is Leslie Plezak with a preview of the speakers this autumn and their topics, ranging from politics to science to history and sports. Leslie, tell us, for those who are not familiar with what the Sinai Forum is and what it does every year.
Okay, thanks for having me, Chris. I'm excited to be here. The Sinai Forum has been providing exceptional and affordable programming on important issues of the day in a town hall setting for 64 years. This is actually our 64th season.
Wow.
And the season will take place this fall for the second time in a row on the Westville campus of Purdue Northwest, so formerly Purdue North Central. And it is an opportunity for people of Northwest Indiana to come and see some of our greatest thought leaders, to experience first-hand conversations with people in a number of different subject areas. And one of the best things about the forum is that we always have a 30-minute Q&A after their presentation so that people in the audience can pose questions directly to the speakers. So it's been around for a long time, and I'm super excited about the speakers that are coming this year.
I can't certainly doubt that. But be sure here, we start the series off here on September 10th there in Westville with a very famous MSNBC half a show host, at least, or one half of the team, I should say, in the morning, Joe. Joe Scarborough is going to be there. Tell us what Joe's coming in to talk about.
Okay, so like you mentioned, September 10th, and all the programs happen on Sunday afternoon. Joe Scarborough, who is the face of MSNBC's Morning Joe, is going to be talking about the political landscape. So he, those of you who know who Joe Scarborough is, you know that he greets his morning audiences with his outspoken political commentary. And he is going to share his thoughts regarding the current state of politics, which certainly there's plenty to talk about. He is a very accomplished political analyst and a former member of Congress for the state of Florida, a Republican from 1994 to 2001.
Now, I have to ask the question because we know people watch Morning Joe. They see not only Joe Scarborough, but his co-host and soon to be his wife, Mika Brzezinski. Do we know if Mika is going to be attending the event at the Sinai Forum this year?
It's funny you ask that question. I've been asked that question quite a bit as I've been out speaking about the forum. And we are contracted specifically with Joe Scarborough.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I understand, she travels with him occasionally. So we're not scheduled to have her there, but you never know. So we'll have to wait till September 10th to see.
Well, by golly, it's worth certainly picking up a season ticket to catch that, to be sure. And continuing on, I guess, in September, there's some interesting and serious topics coming up here. The next one after Joe Scarborough talks about the state of America and African Americans. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Jason L. Riley, he's a senior editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's a commentator on Fox, and Jason Riley's thesis is that government efforts to help the black underclass, efforts which began in the 1960s with the war on poverty and various great society programs, have had a poor track record. And he's going to talk about why he feels these types of things have or should influence policy decisions, but they don't often do. And Jason Riley was recommended by one of our speakers last year. We hosted Brett Stevens right after the election, and we've heard great things about Jason Riley, and we're very much looking forward to his conversation about policy and the African-American community. He also writes a lot about immigration, so like you said, a more serious topic. but definitely a timely topic.
Wow, that would be very interesting to hear. In October, we start out the month of Sinai Forum talks with one that is entitled The Greatest Story Ever Told So Far. And it has a very interesting gentleman who is, a pseudo-celebrity at least, a physicist who has a definite point of view. We have Lawrence Krauss coming in. Tell us about that and what he's going to talk about here, please.
Yeah, so Lawrence Krauss, Dr. Lawrence Krauss, is a theoretical physicist out of Arizona State University. He's the director of the Origins Project at Arizona State, and he has written a number of books, but he's going to be talking about his book, like you mentioned, The Greatest Story Ever Told So Far, and the subtitle is Why Are We Here? So he is a passionate advocate for scientific reason, and he takes a look at, how we are here. He looks at, it says, scales so small that they're invisible to microscopes, to the birth and rebirth of light, and into the natural forces that govern the existence of life. So he ponders those really deep questions. And if you're a science buff, if you are interested in the conversations that are going on about scientific reason, Lawrence Krauss is going to be an amazing speaker. And I've actually seen some of his work. And he's not only a scientist, but he is kind of an entertainer. He's actually very entertaining to listen to. So we're excited that we have Lawrence Krauss, like you mentioned, on Sunday, October 15th.
Yeah, I've had a chance to see Dr. Krauss on a number of television shows, a lot of them dealing with physics or science topics. He's very, very interesting. Always has great comments in the context of those shows, and it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say there on the stage at Purdue Northwest in Westville coming up for the Sinai Forum. We're talking with Leslie Plesac, who's executive director of the Sinai Forum, which is based at Purdue University Northwest over in Westville. And we're talking about the 2017 Sinai Forum series that's underway this fall. The next one on the list in October is getting back to politics and a little bit of history this time. Tell us what John Meacham is going to be talking about and his topics, talking about understanding Trump, a historical perspective.
Yeah, so John Meacham is a well-known presidential historian and a contributor to Time and the New York Times, and he has several New York Times best-selling books. One, which is called American Lion, Andrew Jackson in the White House, won a Pulitzer Prize. And John Meacham, his talk is going to draw from both the left and the right, and he'll take a nonpartisan view of the populist fervor that gripped the country and ascended Donald Trump to the nation's highest office. And then he's going to look at how the president continues to break precedent on numerous issues, from his noteworthy combination of public and private interests to his unorthodox use of social media. So we're going to take a look at the current administration from a historical perspective. And John Meacham is, I've gotten feedback from other speakers bureaus around the country that he is an exceptional speaker.
Wow.
In fact, someone today emailed me with the Richmond Forum and said that they have hosted him before, and he said he is a presidential historian with some comedian inside of him. So I always look for speakers who are going to be entertaining and informative. So I think we can expect that from John Meacham.
Well, certainly in this topic in particular, you have to have a sense of humor, to be sure. And that, by the way, is going to happen on October 29th there at the Purdue University Northwest Westville campus. And we'll find out, tell you more here about where and how to get tickets for the season as well, too. Looking into November, Leslie, there's, an interesting topic in dealing with finances and Wall Street. Tell us about that speaker.
We're looking forward to hosting Sheila Kolhatkar. She's a staff writer for The New Yorker, and she has her first book out called Black Edge, the subtitle Inside Information, Dirty Money, and the Quest to Bring Down the Most Wanted Man on Wall Street. And she'll discuss the rise of the powerful new class of billionaire financiers during the past two decades, which marked a shift in American economics and the political landscape. And so she's going to tell the story of Stephen A. Cohen and SAC Capital. He was an ambitious billionaire, and he went on to become one of the richest and most influential figures in finance while putting himself safely beyond the reach of the law. So he was involved in some insider trading, and the story is compelling. I think people will find that it's informative. Sheila Kolhatkar, as I mentioned, is a staff writer who covers economics, national politics, women's issues. But she tells that story, which gives kind of an interesting twist to what's currently going on Wall Street.
That's great. That's coming up in November. And then the last in the series for the Sinai Forum 2017 is going to be in Westville on December 3rd. And it's, I understand, a sports-related topic. Tell us about this fella and what he's going to speak about.
Yeah, so it's been a while since the Forum has hosted anyone in sports. David Epstein is a writer with ProPublica, and he is the author of a New York Times bestselling book called The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. And I saw David Epstein's 2014 TED Talk. It's one of the most 20-viewed TED Talks of 2014, and he looks at that kind of age-old debate about physical competition. So are athletes like Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, and Serena Williams genetic freaks that are put here to dominate sport, or are they simply normal people who overcame their limits by, you know, force and practice and training? And we've all heard of the 10,000-hour rule. So David Epstein looks at that nature versus nurture debate, and he combines science and genetics and sport, and he is a fabulous speaker. I think people will find that whether it's to look at professional athletes or their own experience as an athlete or their children as athletes, David Epstein has a lot to share about his ideas on how athletes become the extraordinary performers that they are.
Wow. Now, Leslie, we have a great lineup for speakers for the event this year for the Sinai Forum 2017. Tell us here in more detail about how you can get a chance to see and hear these great folks speak on the Westville campus, as well as how you can get tickets for the events.
Right. So the tickets are on sale right now, and the Sinai Forum is always sold as a series. So the question that I get asked the most is, can I come to one of the programs? And like I just mentioned, it's always sold as a series, but it's a pretty affordable ticket. And one of the original missions of the Sinai Forum was to provide affordable programming. So for all six speakers in a general seating, our regular ticket is $100, so $100 for all six. And those can be purchased on our website, pnw.edu/Sinai, S-I-N-A-I hyphen forum. So if you go to the Purdue Northwest website, you can do a search for the Sinai Forum and find more information about all the speakers. You can find information about purchasing tickets. You can read the full bios of each of the six speakers. And we're excited this year because normally the Sinai Forum hosts five speakers, and this year we were able to bring in a sixth speaker for the enjoyment of our subscribers.
That's great. Well, I was thinking that maybe it's an opportunity for a family to get together. And okay, you've got $100, or maybe if you want to do the take an opportunity to not only hear and see the speaker, but also maybe have a chance to meet the person before the event. It's an opportunity here to pick up a family ticket, perhaps. So maybe if somebody wants to go and catch a particular speaker, they can take advantage of still having an opportunity to go.
Right, right. So, you know, but each individual series is sold separately. So we don't sell a family ticket, but we do have the two levels. And you mentioned the patron ticket, and the patron ticket gives subscribers an opportunity to attend an exclusive reception prior to each program with the speaker. And you have an opportunity to talk with them, to get a photo, to have a book signed if you choose to. And it really is an opportunity. Last year we hosted Ted's couple. He was so gracious to every single person that attended the reception, as well as those in the general audience. So it really is kind of a unique opportunity in our area to rub elbows with some really notable speakers.
Probably should mention some of the sponsors for the entire series of speeches. I know very community-minded organizations have been involved in this for a number of years. And tell us about this year's sponsors.
So we have four season sponsors this year in LaPorte Hospital, the Times Media Company, Blue Chip Casino Hotel and Spa, and Urschel Laboratories. And then we have sponsors who have also sponsored programs in the Anderson Foundation, the Bankoff Family, the Herald Argus and News Dispatch, the Duneland Health Council, Horizon Bank, and our receptions are also sponsored. We have the Leonard J. and Irene Brown Foundation, Harbor Trust Investment Management Company, Scannell Wealth Management, and Blue Chip is also sponsoring one of our receptions this year. So we are very, very lucky to have Horizon Bank as well, because the forum is a partnership of the university, of the Bankoff Families Endowment that has been around for all 64 years, and our corporate sponsors and subscribers. I mean, it's an opportunity to come together and hear very interesting things, maybe go out to dinner after and have some conversation about what you heard. Mm-hmm. I think this world could use more understanding. So to me, it's an opportunity, whether you agree or disagree with a speaker, it's an opportunity to hear what they have to say, be open-minded, potentially challenge that speaker if you disagree, and then, you know, have some discussion afterwards. So that's really...
That's Leslie Plesak, who's the executive director of the Sinai Forum at Purdue University Northwest. It's, of course, always held in the series at the Purdue University Northwest's Westville campus. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. Hope you'll be with us tomorrow when we have a conversation with the new Valparaiso Police Chief, Jeff Ballin.